Climb into the cockpit with pilot and Wing Square's Chief Legal Officer, Tim Perilla, as he invites legal leaders aboard to share advice that will help you navigate even the most turbulent times of in-house counsel work. We'll cover a range of topics from data privacy to legal team structure to public company transactions and beyond. You don't want to miss this series. Fasten your seatbelt and prepare for takeoff. You're listening to Cockpit Counsel.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Cockpit Counsel. My name is Tim, and I'm the Chief Legal Officer at Link Squares.
And I'm Alyssa Verzino, producer and co-host of the show. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Now let's jump into our next episode.
We've got Matt Nolan with us. Matt is the Assistant General Counsel at Honeywell. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we start every show the same way. It's an aviation-themed podcast. What is your pre-flight ritual?
Pre-flight ritual.
Like literally.
The most literal sense of it.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
So yeah. When I'm flying. I'll always go to the bathroom before I get on the plane. Yeah. I drink a lot of fluids, try to stay hydrated, also a lot of caffeine. So making sure that I bought myself a good amount of time.
Right.
Regardless of how the start of that flight goes, how much time you might be sitting on a tarmac and not able to get up, everything else. So bathroom definitely happens. I have an inflatable pillow that I bought for lumbar support that I will pull out of my bag and get that to the right level of inflation. Tuck that in right in the back. It has made flying an incredibly different experience when I get up in the end of it. So little hack right there. And then I'll normally settle in with a book, actually.
Right.
So no superstitious anything or whatever else. I've over the years flown quite a bit for work. And so I just sort of got in a groove and I do it.
That's good. How often are you on the road?
These days, less than I have been in an incredibly long period of time.
Yeah.
My girlfriend right now has better airline status than me. And that's not something I think I've ever been able to say in my life.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's wonderful that you can admit
so, that. Yeah, I mean, that's a thing. It's right there. It's tough to give that up.
Yeah.
At Honeywell, we've got people all over the world. And so they spend money to fly us around to different facilities, much less.
Yeah.
Whereas at some of my previous organizations, we've been a much more lean team, also with a global geographical presence. And I mean, I was nipping at the heels of United 1K status. No, I actually was United 1K consistently.
Yeah.
It's global services. I was surprised I didn't get there 1 year. I mean, just a ridiculous amount of time on the road. But
yeah. Well, I'm sure it's nice having a little breathing room too. It's nice to stay home from time to time.
It can be. And it's been a good season of life to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I tend to think of life coming in waves, and they're never predictable waves, but there are periods of time that are more active. There are periods of time that are more sort of retrench, stabilize, get things going. With lots of things going on in life, the last couple of few years have been a reestablish a foundation, reestablish a home base. Mm-hmm. I just moved to Charlotte a few years ago, so building my life and integrating there. Right. It has been much easier to do, not having to be on the road all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what brought you to Honeywell?
Fantastic question.
Maybe it just in the interest of keeping us on track, if you had to pick maybe one or two things that you think put you on the current sort of career trajectory that you're on, and then how that ended at Honeywell so far.
Yeah, sure thing. How far back would you like me to go?
It's up to you.
So I'll give you I'll attempt to be brief. Feel free to just jump in and pull this off. It's a challenge I have sometimes. I've worked on it. I've gotten better, but it doesn't mean I'm good at it. As is lots of things in life, as are lots of things in life.
Sure.
I started with a law firm doing M&A law, left that, went in-house relatively early in my career, which I'm thankful for. It wasn't something I'd necessarily anticipated doing as early as I did. 3.5 years in, a financial crisis in the late aughts.
Yep.
I found my way in-house, but absolutely the best thing that happened professionally to me, being able to be closer to the business, more integrated and plugged into seeing the results of the work that I'm doing, being there on the back end to see how things play out and what part of legal counseling matters versus what part very often does not end up mattering.
Right.
At the law firm, for the billable hour rate that we were being charged out at, they were never keeping us around to see how things sorted out on the back end. You get the thing done, you move on to the next thing. So
that's right.
The relationships are great, everything else. So it was with Dow Corning Corporation in Michigan.
Yeah.
While I was at Dow Corning, I was given the opportunity, completely out of luck, quite honestly, to take an expat assignment. We had had a person who was supposed to move to China to do a compliance-based role for a few years. Mm-hmm. 3 months into the role, or three-ish months, my memory fails, it's been a while.
Right.
She left, she got recruited for another job over in Singapore. And all of a sudden, we had budgeted a compliance attorney in China for a period of time, and nobody really positioned well to jump into it. So I was relatively early career. I had expressed an interest in cross-training and learning different things. I was asked if I'd be willing to move to China. I said, yes, not necessarily because I knew it would be great, but because it would be interesting. So went and did that. That's where I added compliance to, you know, sort of my wheelhouse from a technical perspective, learning it on the fly in China I was counseling the organization through. So did that. It was also during commercial counseling at that place. When we moved home, I was married at the time. My ex-wife wanted to go to law school. There were no law schools that she wanted to go to that were commutable and that she got into from Midland, Michigan, where Dow was.
Okay.
So that necessitated a shift. I ended up at the Heiko Companies in Chicago, mm-hmm. Worked with them for a period of years, had a good run, had a really good time with that.
Yep.
Was able to travel a lot using the commercial counseling, the compliance, but also starting to get involved in some labor issues, some HR issues, some disputes, you know, sort of more broad generalist sort of thing. And while I was there, in 2019, I was hit by a car.
Oh my gosh.
While I was out jogging, car was going full speed, never saw me, about 40 miles an hour.
Oh man.
I am very fortunate not only to have lived through that, but to have lived with very minor long-term consequences.
Yeah.
I'm on the edge of the positive potential outcomes of the spectrum that you could get for that. So a year after that, I had had a friend from 20 years earlier in college who had taken a job as a CFO of a startup medical device company, mm-hmm. Creating emergency medical first responder products, and asked me to come build a legal department for him.
Nice.
It was during COVID. During COVID, you could take a job fully remotely, so I didn't have to move for the job. Mm-hmm. My wife's job at the time was still there in Chicago, so I took the job, did it out of the bedroom for about a year. And then she and I decided to get divorced. When that happened, I figured if I'm going to be moving out anyway, I might as well move to where the company is. That brought me to Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right.
And then through a confluence of a few other things, I ended up with how things were at the company and with other changes happening, ending up at Honeywell and choosing Honeywell because Honeywell was a place that I could see myself being and not have to continue to change companies, change colleagues, change systems, everything else,
right,
continually to have my career go forward. And instead could have that all happen within the context of one organization.
Yep.
So here I am at Honeywell, a year and a half or so in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. Well, I mean, it's great that you're able to find a place that looks like it's going to be a long-term home for you.
It feels like it. Yeah. It's one of these places. It's just so big.
Yeah.
It's tough to even figure out what are all of the opportunities that are possible and how to navigate to get to them. I mean, that's a process. It's always a process with a larger place.
Yeah.
There are every job, every place I've lived, there are upsides and downsides. Right. So, but in general, I've worked with really good people. I've learned things. Build good relationships, and those are always going to put you in a good position.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you've progressed through your career, obviously, you've had a handful of different changes, small companies, big companies. What were some of the common themes that maybe you could pass on as advice to how you thought about your career development and how you think about it now?
Yeah, that's a great point. Great question. Early on, I mean, I've always been an ambitious person. I've always been a person who's wanted to see what I'm capable of. If there's a competition, I want to win it.
Yeah.
If there is something to try to achieve, I want to achieve it to the highest degree that I can. That tends toward a workaholicism.
Sure.
That word, I don't think is a word, but
it is
now. I'll roll with it for now.
Yeah,
it tends toward that instinct of just living whatever the mission is. I worked briefly in campaigns back when I was in college and then started law school before I actually became a corporate lawyer. It's that same thing. When you're doing something, all in is very much my speed. But as I moved through with Dow Corning, then at Heiko, then with Safeguard, I can look at it as a middle-aged attorney. My friends and I have debated when middle age starts, by the way. It's somewhere in there, but I'm 43. Right. I'm a middle-aged lawyer at this point, right? Yeah. For me now, working with good people, doing something that I can connect to making the world better than if I was not doing it, and feeling a connection between the results of what I'm putting in and the output that's coming out on the back end.
Yep.
Those are my primary variables now. It's not necessarily I aspire to the highest possible job with the biggest possible salary that I could get to.
Right.
Money is a game of diminishing returns, as is title, status, et cetera. Sure. I am very fortunate to have grown up in a relatively small community. I have modest enough needs on those fronts.
Yeah.
And there are lots of other things that I can try to conquer and tackle and achieve at that satisfy that.
Yeah.
While then having my professional life be able to connect to some of those other variables as well.
Yeah. Did you grow up in Midland, Michigan?
Not Midland. I did grow up in Michigan.
Where?
I grew up in Muskegon, Michigan, on the west side.
Okay. Yeah.
You know Michigan well?
I grew up just outside of Detroit.
Oh, there we are. Where outside of Detroit?
Troy.
Okay.
Yeah.
The guy who was the best man in my wedding with my ex-wife went to Brother Rice.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. He lived in Troy right there. So,
yeah, absolutely. Small world. You're the second person that we've talked to today who's from Michigan.
We're out there. We're around.
Yeah.
I saw somebody getting Go Blue engraved on a portable cell phone charger earlier. Apparently engravings are the big thing at the annual meeting this year.
Okay.
So I didn't dislike seeing that.
I'm going to have to figure out what to go get engraved on a charger now.
Up to 25 characters you could get. And in the moment, on the spot, I was not creative enough to come up with something fantastic. I literally think I chose my name or something like that, because even that feels different and interesting and fun just to have a charger with my name. But
yeah,
if I get a great idea, a differentiated idea, maybe I'll go back in and try to get another.
See if you can get another one.
We'll see.
So kind of getting back to like advice for some of our listeners who are maybe earlier on in their career, what are some of the things that you would encourage them to be thinking about, you know, whether it's, is this job right for me as they're going through an interview process, or is this job right for me and does it align with my long-term career goals? What are some things that immediately come to mind for you?
Yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts, and please feel free to follow up on any of these and redirect as I'm going as well, because I want to try to grab them. The first, just off to the side, is the amount of possible things that you can do with your life relative to the amount of things that you will ever have firsthand knowledge of. It dwarfs it, right? So the idea that any of us is ever going to land in the perfect job at the perfect moment with all of the perfect variables, it's exceedingly rare.
Yeah.
So you either need to have modest expectations, or you need to be curious. You need to be very curious and be willing to try things and find new ways to learn more about what might be possible.
Right.
I mean, at this point in my life, being a corporate lawyer with certain types of companies, doing certain types of work, feels like it's a relatively decent use of my skills and assets and time and interests. Mm-hmm. There very likely is something that is much more compelling,
right,
that I just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah.
And so that knowledge of just how massive the universe is and that it's always changing, continues to drive me to stay curious and want to learn. So yeah. I think having relationships with recruiters, you know, at a law firm, every recruiter has the exact same opportunities to shop to you. So if you have a recruiter that you have a relationship with, you're going to be able to find another law firm job.
Right.
All of the in-house jobs, and a lot of my friends who've changed jobs even just this last year that have helped counsel through things, they're not aware of this dynamic. So many of the in-house jobs, particularly the good ones, are sourced exclusively through one particular recruiting firm.
Yeah.
And so if you're not on the radar of that firm as they're going out and doing their search, you're never even going to know that job was possible and existed
right
before it's already filled.
That's
so
right.
Having a relatively broad network, maintaining those relationships when you're not actively hunting and searching for a job,
yep,
just checking in, hey, how's it going? What's new? You know, anything interesting you're seeing in the market, staying sort of tapped in on what things are, even if you have no interest to change.
Yeah,
I think that's a smart and useful thing to do. And then if somebody ever reaches out and approaches you about a position, I had a guy back when I worked at Dow Corning, he told me through his career, he had tried to interview for a job at least once a year,
okay,
even if he didn't want to leave his job.
Right.
Just to stay sort of sharp in the interview process.
Yep.
Maintain a sense of what's out there, get a little bit of feedback about what's working, what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Helps him crystallize how he's thinking about his work, the value he's driving, how he can get better at it. It makes him better at the job he's at existing. And so having that mentality be part of your process in how you're performing the job you currently have is something that I certainly didn't used to think about.
Right.
But it's something I now try to keep top of mind when I have time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of times you brought up curiosity. I think it's a very interesting way to sort of frame the state of mind that you should try to shift to, right? And really like have a genuine interest in really learning more about something, you know, something that may be a mystery to you or maybe you only have tangential knowledge around. What are some times in your career where you've really found that to be like the key thing that's moved you forward?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest one that jumps to mind with me are a couple of specific things around China. I mean, moving to China, I had no idea if that was going to be good or bad professionally.
Yep.
There are people who move overseas and get lost, and then they're out of sight, out of mind at the corporate headquarters. They lose a track of whatever they had been doing. They come back, there's no space for them. It can be very complicated and challenging. I didn't know whether it would be good or bad, but I knew that I wouldn't ever know unless I tried it.
Right.
And I think that instinct to just try it, and the worst thing would have been I go, it's not the right fit.
Yeah.
Okay. You come back and you figure it out and you have confidence that you can figure stuff out after, confidence that you can recover from setbacks.
Yeah.
I think that makes curiosity a lot easier. So that was one case in which that curiosity went, completely changed the trajectory of my career, my life, everything.
Yeah.
Had an absolute blast with it. When I was there, most companies have a policy, at least as written on paper, if not in practice. And that's an interesting distinction that I was curious about.
Sure.
The policy is from an anti-corruption perspective, there's an absolute prohibition on cash payments for anything from the company.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's got to be on a card. That way there's a paper record. It's tracked. If you do cash, way too much opportunity for slush and improper things and whatever else.
Yep.
I was able to build enough of a relationship with the local team where one of our sales guys came to me at lunch one day and he said, you know, in this training, we say no cash for anything ever. I said, yeah, that's the global policy, right? He said, in Taiwan, last year, this was before I had been there, he said, last year, one of our distributors, the guy who owned the distribution company, died. And when he died, as somebody that had a strong business relationship with him, we were 100% going to that funeral. Yeah. We wanted to, and we honestly had to if we wanted to maintain the relationship.
Yeah.
But when you go to a funeral in Taiwan, you don't send flowers. You don't bring flowers. You're certainly not going to buy a gift or send a gift. You bring what's called a baibao, which is a white envelope with a culturally appropriate, relationship appropriate amount of cash in the envelope. It's what you do culturally. It is the only acceptable way to go about that process. So he said, how do we do this? Now, I could have taken the approach there of saying, well, look, the corporate policy is no cash, so I guess you can't do it. We have to find another way, which would have not made sense for the outcome that we wanted, maintaining a good relationship.
Of course.
It also wouldn't have made sense from the perspective of us being relevant locally in that spot. It was a spot where a global policy that sounded great, just the rubber hit the road. The reality was there, and I was looking at it. And I said, well, yeah, honestly, it makes sense that in that case you would. So what we ended up doing was designing a process, because it was rare. It's not going to happen very often. So you can be pretty manual and relatively senior. We had a regional president sign off on things, a local compliance attorney sign off on it, document it within the gifts tracker, and then you could use the cash.
Yeah.
And that felt rational. But I mean, I had to run that up a lot of different chains to get the approval.
Yeah.
I didn't want to accept a situation where we knew that a rule that was written on paper was costing us business for a reason that nobody would have thought made sense if we actually played it out. Bringing a white envelope with that cash in that moment was not an actual compliance risk. That was behavior we needed to find a way to enable to be more successful as a business. And so that curiosity in that moment, I think, paid off too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's awesome. Transitioning to some advice for our listeners. So you talked about interviewing and keeping that skill set sharp. What are some questions that you like to ask during an interview to the interviewer during different stages in the process? And then, Tim, it'd be interesting to hear if you have any questions that you ask as well.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know your questions as well. Sure. I'm always trying to grow my game. Mm-hmm. Something that I really like to ask when I'm in a process is why I shouldn't take a job. I like to understand what would be the thing that when I take this job could have the possibility to frustrate me, or that is challenging about this particular workplace or this dynamic. I like to ask it not because I think the person doing the interview is going to be telling me all of the horrible things about the company they work for and that they like well enough to want to bring other people into, but it helps me get an early sense of how transparent they're going to be, mm-hmm. how open they're going to be, how willing they're going to be to have that conversation and to be able to dive through and do it. I also very much like to understand what is the situation that I'm stepping into if I were to get this role. Mm-hmm. So asking from the perspective of you're going to get the job, that you feel very confident that you're going to have the job, that's how you should approach the question. You ask the question of, why is this job available? Is it because it's a different job? If it's a new job because the company's growing and there's a new need, that's something that could be fantastic, but also could mean that if budgets get tight again, that's not something that's in the historical run rate.
Right.
On the other hand, you also want to know if you're replacing somebody else, is it because that person got poached for a bigger and better opportunity elsewhere?
Right.
Or is it because that person got let go?
Yeah.
And if it's because that person got let go, I want to know specifically what was it about their performance that you're trying to fix with this hire? Because that tells me a lot more about what you're actually hiring me to do. That's very often very different than what's written on the page for job description, right? If it's, they never wrote back to emails.
Yeah.
Okay, then I know that day one, that's a thing I'm going to have to prioritize.
Yeah.
But if you don't verbalize it very often, that type of thing doesn't come out through the process. So those are a couple that I like to think about.
Yeah. I think for me, one is kind of a corollary to that. So, what change do you expect this person, the successful candidate, to make in your organization? Right. Most actually every job that I've had has been the first in-house attorney at the company.
It's a different type of challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's fun, but, and like, I, because of that, I love the career that I've had and what I do day in and day out. Right. But what it allows me to do is start to figure out what environment I'm walking into. Cause from that answer, I can start to think about, okay, what does success look like? Does this hiring manager actually have an understanding of why they're hiring me in the first place? And maybe it's like, if I'm getting replacing somebody, you know, that's a different story. Then it's like, okay, like, yeah, like the person was doing just fine, but like, you know, we know we don't want that exact same profile, mm-hmm. but we don't know exactly what we want. It just brings, for me, it brings a different level of awareness into the role because, you know, once you're getting to that point, you're able to ask those questions. It's already been determined that you have the hard skills to do the job.
Right.
If not, you're not going to be in that chair. So then it becomes like, all right, so like why, you know, sort of why go forward? And is this going to be something that's a fit for me, a fit for you, that type of thing?
Fit is an incredible way to mention and bring that up. When I was leaving Dow Corning Corporation and ended up going to the HEICO companies when my ex-wife was going to law school, one of the jobs I interviewed for was with another big global multinational company.
Yeah.
They posted this job, and I won't name the name because even the brand name of the product would, I don't want to go specific with it. But it was a really cool sounding job. You were going to be the attorney for this product. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool job.
Yeah.
As I went through the interview process and talked with them, ultimately, on the back end of it, they ended up hiring internally an intellectual property attorney to take that job.
Yeah.
So it was through the process of the job search that they clarified which skill set they actually wanted and needed and what mattered in the process. And so the thing that was instructive to me was when you see a job posted, the posting itself doesn't necessarily tell you what that job is that you're trying to get. And so to your questions or others trying to get to the bottom of what is this actual job and is that fit? The other thing that I take from that is that you just cannot take these things personally.
Yeah.
It feels so frustrating to know that you are near the end of a process.
Yeah.
And then have a company pick somebody else. And they're never going to tell you why the other person got selected and not you.
Right.
But very often it's because through that process, they've clarified, well, it's this other experience that we need. You know, it's like in that particular case, I've never been an intellectual property attorney.
Right.
If the job had been posted that way, I never would have applied for it in the first place.
Right.
So that resiliency in the process and just continuing to step up to the plate and swing the bat has always been part of my process as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great answer. And do you have any advice for when you're starting at a new role, how to build relationships early on and also adapt to a new culture in the process?
Yeah, certainly. So I'll take this opportunity to put in a plug. Last year, I was on a panel at the ACC annual meeting talking about the first 6 months when you take over as general counsel at a new company and what you should expect and how you should go about it, the different variables. ACC now has... I forget if they call it an info pack or something to that effect, that has a number of materials all structured around that first, you know, I think the way they framed it is the first 6 months in a role and how you should come into it and what you should think about. I think of relationship mapping as a thing that just makes sense, like literally writing it out. Yeah. You know, who are the people that are my primary customers and clients? Who are the people I have to keep happy? It's not necessarily the people that other people think are those people, because some of those stakeholders are just frankly going to be very easy to keep comfortable. Some of them are going to be higher volume. Some of them are going to seem like they matter a lot, but to the people that are actually evaluating you, they won't. And that doesn't mean those people should not matter in the process. It means to me helping to shift the organization to think and see this is actually where your legal services are landing. This is what matters, et cetera, and playing into that.
Right.
But I mean, literally writing it out, asking other people who matters, which, how do things get done here? Not formally and on paper, but, you know, at every organization, at some point in those first couple of months, you realize, yeah, anytime a question comes up in this area, we need to go talk to this person, right?
Right.
And then if you talk to that person, it gets done. If you talk to this other person that seems like it should be, it sits for a while and everybody kind of right. knows that's how it is. And so the informal way that things get done at that place go the other. So mapping that out, if you're taking over particularly a general counsel gig, mapping out law firm relationships in a similar way, what's there, how are people getting things done yeah. now?
Yep.
And then relative to the organization's risk profile and what you think is going to need to be counseled, how to right size that, you know, beef up in the areas you need to beef up, scale back in the areas that that need to get scaled back. Same thing with systems.
Yep.
You know, you can be over-engineered with systems, you could be under-engineered, there's no perfect spot. You just have to marry it to your culture and everything else. But
yeah.
but I guess being deliberate would be the best way I would summarize that advice.
That's a great answer. Awesome. Well, we end every episode with some rapid fire questions. Mm. So what is your hot take on working in-house?
Ooh, hot take on working in-house. A lot of the job, I don't know how hot this take is actually, but it's what jumps to mind. Working in-house is only partially about being a lawyer.
Yeah.
A lawyer happens to be your technical subset that you bring, but you're a business advisor. You're part of the leadership team. And if you don't see the role that way, you're doing it wrong. So you're technically a lawyer, but the job itself is not necessarily lawyering.
That's great. What is your number one interview tip?
Number one interview tip, prepare. Sometimes that's doing your research and homework. Sometimes it's just thinking through your own stories and examples you want to be able to tell, that you want to be able to connect, thinking about who you're going to be interviewing with, what they might come at you with, and you know, having a nice little break of time right before, so you're not coming in hot, get yourself ready and do that. Yeah.
Great. And what is the best career advice that you've ever given or received?
Best career advice. Just keep trying things. Always say, not always, but usually say yes when opportunities to try new things come up. Even if it's not going to be something you're going to do long term, you'll always learn something new. And there's always more to learn. So saying yes when those opportunities come up will lead you to good places.
Yeah. And finally, what's a charity or a cause that's close to your heart that mm-hmm. our listeners should check out?
Fantastic timing for that. And I don't know if there's a way to provide you with a link
yes.
To follow up with on this.
Absolutely.
But, I'm currently in the middle. I've done this the last couple of years. I'm fundraising with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night event.
Oh, nice.
LLS, I mean, leukemia and lymphoma are particularly frustrating forms of cancers.
Yeah.
All forms of cancers hit in a lot of different ways, and they hit each of us at different times in a different ways. But I don't know many, if any, people who haven't been impacted in some way by cancer showing up. And so the LLS Light the Night event is a way for me to tap into my various networks from different periods of my life and time to reach out, to give people the opportunity to come together and to do something. And I think LLS does a fantastic job of fighting against blood cancers.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we will definitely get that out. And thanks so much for joining us today. It was an awesome conversation.
Yeah. Really, thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it.
This was a great time.
We're going to have to do this again next ACC.
I'm up for it. Yeah, let's do it.
It's good. So, and everybody, thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us. And if you have any topics for discussion or guests you'd like to see on the show, feel free to submit them to cockpitcouncil@linksquares.com.